Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio. 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can download from your App Store, your Google Play Store, your Apple App Store. Once it's downloaded, you search for WILK News Radio, click follow. That's it. That's all you have to do. Podcast, we got you covered there. Just search for The Rob O'Donnell Show. We are anywhere. You get your favorite podcast and your smart speakers. Just ask those little suckers to play WILK News Radio, and it'll play us live. How's everyone doing? It is 309, 58 degrees on this Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. Just cruising towards the end of April here, sliding into May. There we go. Hopefully the warmer weather soon upon us. How's everyone doing today? It is Wednesday. Getting over the hump. It's all on the downslope from here. The weekend is in the horizon. It'll be all fine. Some things going on. Well, the USS Gerald R. Ford, it's one of the carrier strike groups that is currently in the Middle East, will be heading home soon. You know, I know there's been a lot of talk. We're going to have three aircraft carriers in the region. First time in a decade that that's happened. Listen, there's an overlap. When we send an aircraft carrier there, it's usually there for a while and overlaps with another one until they get up to speed in the area of operation, and then it comes home. The USS Gerald R. Ford right now is, in the last decade at least, one of the longest deployed aircraft strike groups, aircraft carrier strike groups that has been out there. They've been going at it for a while now, and they're over almost 2 months of what they should have been. So believe me, those 5,000 sailors that are on that ship want to come home. Their families want them to come home. So as soon as The aircraft carrier that's en route gets there and gets established in the area of operations, they get up to speed. They have their sit reps with the transferring crew from the Gerald R. Ford to where they update them and say, hey, these are the things that are going on. This is what we've been dealing with. This is what you need to watch out for. This is the things that we expect in the future. And get them up to speed in doing it. And their air crews, you know, start getting up and getting into the rotation. The Ford will soon be headed home. To where it's after a long deployment, they need repairs, they need refinishing, they need a whole lot of stuff, and that's what happens. Listen, the USS Harry S. Truman was in the Mediterranean and the Red Sea for 9 months, came back, and it's in dry dock now. It's actually getting its midlife refueling, which happens every 20 some odd years, to where they remove the entire nuclear reactor and refinish it and put it back in, ready to go for another 20 years. So that these things happen. This is what goes on. These things are in rotation out of the 11 aircraft carriers that we have. So don't read into the three aircraft carriers where a major escalation in operation. No, it's just a normal transfer of business. A lot of times we do have two aircraft carriers in that area to begin with. The fact that there will be three for a few weeks that overlap, and then one of them will be headed home. I've talked about this at length because, you know, the media tries to make this, oh, you know, we were told this is only going to be a month or so operation, and now we're sending a third aircraft carrier. It's a normal rotation of aircraft carriers. Now, the fact that we're keeping two there, that is an uptick in presence. But because of the situation, because of the conditions there, and there's been that for a while now, where usually there's a few month overlap, not the entire time. But hopefully the second one will be able to leave its area operation in the next couple of months after things stabilize. So that's some things going there. We did see the Supreme Court decision for that Louisiana gerrymandering case that has terrified a lot of Democrat states, not only in the South, but across the nation, especially California has been looked at this. So that's another decision that came out today where basically you can't make congressional districts based on the racial makeup. They have to be fair to all races and basically colorblind. So a good news for the Supreme Court decision there. I believe it was a 6-3 decision. So we have that there. Closer to our area, Luzerne County Council rejected that immigration ordinance that we talked about yesterday. This is something that's been discussed. It's basically a solution that's in search of a problem. They're not having an issue in Luzerne County. This was a look at me type ordinance that basically was for a political feather in some people's cap when it comes to people who want that sort of thing. Now, I think it's pretty easy to understand that law and order and the rule of law should be what dictates right and wrong, because that's why they make the laws. Listen, if you don't like the laws currently, petition those who need to change them. And I'm a big proponent, and then listen, I lose friends on both sides when I say this, of immigration reform. I think we've done a great job at the border. I think the ICE and immigration is doing a good job nationally in rounding up those who shouldn't be here, those who are a danger. And I think we need to morph that into immigration reform. Now, what that is, that's what both sides of the aisle in Congress should be discussing. And listen, the reality is there is no way that millions upon millions of people are going to be round up and removed from this country. You have people here who have been here over 10 years, have no criminal record. There needs to be a pathway. Now, I'm not saying amnesty. I'm not saying they get off scot-free. There needs to be a pathway, though. Now, if that's paying a fine, you will never be a U.S. citizen, but you will have legal residency, which meaning you won't be able to vote in federal elections, which takes that feather from the Democrats that want that out. But it also looks at the reality of, listen, these people have been here. They live among us. They are our neighbors. If they are not a danger and not a criminal record background or criminal charges pending, then we need to open up a path for them. And uprooting them and removing them and throwing them out of the country, I don't think is the best interest of this nation. I don't think it's the best interest for our resources. So I think, you know, we need to come to some sort of a conclusion. And this has been talked about for decades. This is the same talking points that have been there from Clinton, from Obama, from Bush to Trump even. But I would like to see it get some momentum to where they come up with some sort of plan where you do pay a fine. You will never become a citizen, but you will get legal residency, and you will no longer be on the radar of immigration to be removed from the nation, which frees them up to target the people who should be removed from our nation. Now, these ordinances that we've seen in Lackawanna County and Luzerne County just make that more difficult. Luzerne County more particular, because we just had this recent event to where a Dixon City, a Lackawanna County illegal immigrant was drugging and raping a 14-year-old girl in Luzerne County. And then you're going to turn around and try and pass an ordinance to protect people like that? That's garbage. That's nonsense. That should not be tolerated. And thank you to the Democrats and Republicans on Luzerne County Council who saw through that. They voted 8-3 yesterday to defeat an ordinance that would have set limits on when county employees could cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. Some of these ordinances are just total garbage. If you look through the Lackawanna County ordinance, well, any federal agent that comes in must identify themselves, must show proof of who they are. Well, they do this already. When they walk into a county facility, they are identifying themselves. They do have paperwork. This is all just grandstanding for people who want to say, oh, look what we're doing for the immigrant community. And it's not the immigrant community that they're doing it for. It's for their own political posturing. It's for their own political future. It's to rehabilitate some of them who have declined politically to try and move around to that next step, to become popular again. All while making our counties and our areas less safe. Listen, if you're making it harder for our immigration or federal agents to deal within the framework of our system, our courts, our law enforcement departments, our our jails, our correction facilities, you're forcing them out into the street to find these individuals. If you have people who are committing, these are people who have already committed crimes. Now, if you're in our jail system, if you're in our court system, if you're in our police custody, you have committed another crime. So these are the people they're protecting. And thankfully, we've had district attorneys. And in Luzerne County, you have a district attorney who does have an agreement with federal agents. And in Lackawanna County, you do not have that agreement, but you have a district attorney that says no entity is going to tell my detectives of the Luzerne, Lackawanna County DA's office not to cooperate with federal agents. So when we feel fit, we are going to cooperate with federal agents. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to go out there and enforce federal immigration law. A matter of fact, none of them really are. They're assisting. They're following up on paperwork and due process orders that they've been given that have been the same over decades to take individuals that have been arrested for other crimes and have them through removal processes, processes that have already been determined that they should be removed. So, again, kudos to Luzerne County. A handful of Democrats sided with the Republicans to say, no, this is not in the best interest. Now, Councilwoman Joanne Barnes-Smith proposed the Protect Our Neighbors to Ensure Luzerne County Resources Are Utilized for County Business and the Safety of County Buildings Ordinance. Yeah, sounds pretty fancy, right? But Smith's proposed ordinance would not have affected Luzerne County District Attorney Sam Sangaldoce's partnership with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement because he's an elected official that runs independently. He signed an agreement with ICE last year to participate in the 287G program that deputizes local officers for immigration enforcement. Now, again, these officers are not going out and saying, hey, we're going to find illegal immigrants today. It helps them to, when they come across someone for a crime that they're investigating or they're dealing with that happens to have a detainer, that happens to have a warrant from ICE and immigration, that they can legally hold them. They can start that process. Something that we've seen time and time again in sanctuary cities and sanctuary counties or in departments where they have leadership or mayors or police chiefs who said, we will not cooperate with ICE. So here they are, arrest somebody for assault. Here they are, arrest somebody for DUI or drugs. And ICE turns around and says, hey, this person has already been through their due process. We have an order, civil or criminal, that they should be removed. Administrative warrant, whatever the case may be. An administrative warrant still means that they went through due process and their hearing officer said they need to be removed. But because they do not cooperate, they're releasing them back out on the street. So here's somebody who was arrested for another crime who happens to be wanted by ICE, and there's nothing they can do. So they end up releasing them. They end up posting bail. They're back out on the streets. Now, again, here's someone who was arrested for another crime. Let's focus on those people. Let's focus on the illegal immigrants, illegal being the key word here. Listen, immigrants are the fabric of our nation. They always have been. And it's interesting that those who are trying to conflate this into an immigration issue when it's just illegal immigration issue. Our legal immigrants have nothing to worry about. They should have nothing to worry about. Matter of fact, I started this piece off by saying we need to identify the illegal immigrants who have been here over 10 years and get them a pathway. Not a scot-free amnesty, some sort of pathway, some sort of process where they pay a fine. You will not get citizenship, but you will have legal residency. This way they can go on with their life. They can still be the neighbors and employees that we've come to know in our community. And no longer on the radar, which focuses our resources on those that need to be removed, on those who want to flout our laws here across our nation and commit other crimes. There are plenty of them. And let's free that up. Let's get the people who are in our court system, who are in the custody of our police departments, who are in our jails. Let's get that cooperation moving. Listen, I have conversations with Tom Holman, the border czar, quite often. And he said point blank to me, that if there was an agreement between, and not the 287 agreement, just an agreement with a municipality, with a county, with ICE to say, hey, we are going to cooperate you with people in our jails, in our court system, and in our police custody, it would greatly reduce neighborhood enforcement. His words, not mine, his words, greatly reduce neighborhood enforcement. And that leaves room to when you are going to do neighborhood enforcement, wouldn't you want to be involved in that? Wouldn't you want to know? Wouldn't you want a say in that? So have a state entity, have a local police entity be involved with that, not to do the work for them, but to just be involved with the process to ensure the community that this is getting done, because it is our communities here. But our communities also fall under laws, and that's local laws, state laws, and federal laws. All of a sudden, we want to ignore federal laws. That's not the way this country was built. We are a country built on laws. We are a constitutional republic, which is a republic built on laws. Just because you do not like the law, just because those laws aren't popular to you because they don't meet your end right now to increase the census votes, to make your congressional districts bigger than they actually are, You don't ignore the laws. It's as simple as that. Again, you don't like them, change them. But until then, these are the laws. They will be enforced. They should be enforced for the betterment of them all. Prime example, this individual who was raping a 14-year-old girl in Luzerne County. Thankfully, the leadership in Luzerne County Council made the right decision. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 326, 58 degrees here on this Wednesday, April 29th. So yesterday, last night, was the Scranton City Council meeting, and this is starting to get old, and you can see the frustration in the Scranton City Council. Now listen, Scranton City Council and the administration, they're all Democrats. They're all on the same side of the fence politically. But the lack of candor, the lack of openness, the lack of information transfer, the lack of transparency, it seems to be very evident there where, they're trying to get answers on questions and they get slow rolled week after week after week. Watching it not as a Scranton resident, it frustrates me. And last night, it's just constant. Two of the big things that came up I saw during the council members' statement.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Mince was Scranton City's charter says that they will provide ambulance service, but yet they don't have an agreement with an ambulance provider. And they've been asking, why aren't we looking at this? And it's, for some reason, some big secret. Well, only the chairman of the safety committee from the council can meet with the fire chief and get information and ask questions. Well, how come another city council member can? And this was what Sean McAndrew, a city council member, keeps asking. I'm not the chairman. I'm not the co-chairman of the public safety committee, but I am a city council member and I have questions. And through his research, he said the city charter says that they're mandated to provide ambulance service. But since we don't have an agreement and it's just provided by private entities that want an agreement that wouldn't cost the city anything, and we're mandated to do so, this is a problem. He also talked about the financial status of the city, saying that what they're spending is more than what they're bringing in for the first quarter of this year. So I'll play you some of what happened at this city council meeting yesterday.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sean McAndrew. Do you have any motions or comments?
Yeah, I have a few. So some updates regarding some of the response that I received from my questions from last week. The last 2 weeks I've been asking regarding the city having a dedicated ambulance service. I know there were some concerns. The mayor said to Councilman Schuster and Attorney Gilbride in a meeting, I asked for those concerns to be put in writing. I received the response that the chair and the co-chair of the public safety committee can meet with Chief Judge to be educated on the matter. So then I followed up asking, well, I'm neither of the chair or the co-chair, so can I please meet with them and have it recorded so we have an official statement from the city? The response I got was, we have requested an update from the Fitch and Associates regarding ambulance services in the city. I believe Fitch and Associates is a company that they are using as a consultant the last few years regarding ambulance services. So it looks like, I asked for their concerns in writing. I can't get it. They offered other council members to meet with Chief Judge, but when I ask, it just gets ignored. I can't even get an answer. It's like getting to the point where you really can't make this stuff up. But I was doing some research, and in October 2024, in an article, Chief Judge said, from an emergency management perspective, if you called me at any given time and asked me how many ambulances are currently on duty in the city, I couldn't tell you. The Lackawanna County 911 Center couldn't tell you. And under the city's charter, it's our responsibility to provide EMS services to our residents. Now let's let that sink in. 7 years under this Mayor Cognetti administration, they've been violating the charter, and it hasn't been addressed. We are a city that cannot definitely say how many ambulances are on duty at any given time, yet we are responsible for providing the service to our residents. That alone should be enough to demand immediate action. Other municipalities have dedicated ambulance service. Scranton does not. Instead, the administration continues to ignore my request to put their concerns in writing or discuss openly and transparently. I'm frankly shocked that after commissioning a study and having years of discussion, because this has been brought up by previous councils, the city still does not have a defined path forward. No timeline, no plan, just more ignoring questions and delays. It's not a complicated task. It's about accountability, transparency, and making sure when somebody calls 911, help is there. Scranton residents deserve better. Now, we have a company who's doing the services now. All they're asking for, if from when they came to caucus a few years ago, is to have a written agreement at zero cost to us. My understanding, there'll be more ambulances on the road dedicated just staying in Scranton. Why is that something we will not entertain right now? I understand maybe the bigger plan is to have our fire department do it, but until then, we have to have something better. Having our fire department doing is going to cost a ton of money and it's going to take a lot of time. So the fact that we can't even get answers on something that's free, like if we had a contract and they weren't telling us and we couldn't answer that question, how many ambulance services were on the road, then we can call them in and hold them accountable. You know, if the service wasn't great, we could hold them accountable. We have nothing to do that, and it's really shocking to me. So I'm going to ask again if I could have a meeting with Chief Judge, but also, if they don't want to answer me in writing, they don't want to have a meeting just me, let's call the mayor and let's call the police fire chief judge into a caucus to address the concerns. If you could send that down, Frank.
I'll reach out, sir.
Awesome. Thank you. So we had a finance meeting yesterday. Myself and Councilwoman Rothschild went. It was a very good meeting, getting an update on how the budget's performing right now. We are going to be getting an update hopefully by the end of May and the beginning of June regarding Pell's five-year projections for the city. I know there was a State of the City address that was, you know, done last week and you know, was pretty positive. But my concern is there's some things that aren't being said. We have an LST tax issue, which right now, if the state doesn't change some wording, we're going to be short around $3 million. How are we going to cover that cost? The next question would be regarding the finances. The Pell's five-year projection, it's not done yet, but when I asked, is there a projection or how is it looking? They're saying, obviously, our expenses are outperforming our revenue. So there will be shortfalls. That is not being said, that's not being addressed, but I do think we need to have those hard questions with the city and the finance department sooner than later. So hopefully when June comes and we get that five-year projections, not only can we call Pell in and the administration to discuss that, but also to start discussing the budget a little bit more openly for 2027. So we're not shocked when November, the second week of November comes and there's possibly tax increases.
So that was Council Member Sean McAndrew last night at the Scranton City Council meeting, and two major things there. Listen, I'm all for the Scranton Fire Department having their own in-house ambulance service, but you're talking millions of dollars to get that done. If they can get the grants, if they can get the funding to do that, that's the best way to go. But at this point, if by their charter, their own charter, they are mandated to provide ambulance service, and they don't have a written agreement with an ambulance service provider, the public safety liability is tremendous. Especially if something happens, a mass casualty incident. You know, we just saw this garage collapse in Philadelphia. If God forbid something like that happens, and that's not in place, the liability against the city, it would just be unbearable. And then to hear that their expenses are outperforming their revenues and talking already about possible $3 million hit if the state does not change language and possible increases at the end of the year for a budget – seems like there should be more transparency and openness between the administration and their own council. You know, the mayor's been on this very station talking about how well she works with her city council and the checks and balances the way things should be. That's a good talking point, but it doesn't appear that's what happens in reality and in practice in City Hall in the city of Scranton. So something that we're going to monitor here, and if you're a Scranton resident, I would definitely monitor it. It's 3:35 here at WILK. Time for the news. We're back. 3:41. So authorities continue to search for a fugitive after a high-speed chase yesterday that led police from Carbondale all the way to the Scranton Hill section, where the suspect crashed into another vehicle, then fled on foot. Confidential informant tipped Carbondale police officers to a group rolling through town again in a silver Dodge Challenger with West Virginia tags and guns in the trunk, according to the criminal complaint. The informant identified the driver as Amir Hunter and Philip DeBarry, or MK, as the passenger. Police were familiar with DeBarry from past interactions involving guns, controlled substances, and gang activity. So here's someone who was involved with guns, controlled substances, and gang activity. Police are familiar with him. Back out again at it, right? Officers noted he'd previously been aggressive with officers. Officers ran a record check through Lackawanna County Prison Intelligence System, which indicated DeBarry is a validated member of the Bloods gang out of Harrisburg. Sergeant Williams then searched open-source social media platforms, found rap videos with DeBarry, and some others were portrayed brandishing firearms. About 1 p.m., Williams initiated a traffic stop of the vehicle in North Main Street, Carbondale, directly in front of police headquarters. Know the area well, drive by it all the time. According to the complaint, Williams approached Hunter in the driver's seat and could smell marijuana. The front seat passenger admitting having smoked marijuana earlier in the day. Hunter gave the officers permission to search the vehicle, and officers asked Bakerville to get out of the car. Officers noticed Bakerville was reaching toward the center console and asked him to stop. As Bakerville was getting out of the car, officers noticed the imprint in the leg of his pants, which appeared to be a gun. As officers were attempting to detain him, he began resisting, pulling away, and attempting to run. Officers yelled gun, indicating Bakersville had a firearm. Officers then attempted to detain DeBarry, who was in the back seat. As he was being escorted from the car, he fled on foot. At that point, Hunter re-entered his vehicle and sped away. Simultaneously, the officer fired her service a weapon, striking the vehicle. Sergeant Williams retrieved a Glock 43 handgun from Bakersville, who told them they would find more guns and narcotics in the vehicle. Officers soon located DeBarry in the Lackawanna County River under a bridge in 7th Avenue near Dunkin' Donuts and took him into custody. Now, police chased Hunter westerly on Route 6 in Carbondale and then through Mayfield, Archibald, and onto the Casey Highway. He continued on the Central Scranton Expressway and then onto Mulberry Street in Scranton. Hunter ultimately crashed into another vehicle at the intersection of Mulberry and Taylor Avenue and fled. He remains at large. Lackawanna County District Attorney's Office and the Pennsylvania State Police are investigating the officer-involved discharge aspect, according to the District Attorney, Brian Gallagher. Bakersville faces felony charges for illegal possession of a firearm, receiving stolen property, and additional misdemeanor charges of resisting arrest. He remains in Lackawanna County Prison in lieu of $150,000 bail. According to court records, as of earlier today, DeBarry has not yet been arraigned. So here's an instance where we know these are bad actors. We know what they're involved in. They're out there on the street continuing to do it with guns again, with drugs, with everything else. High-speed chases through multiple towns on our highways into a major city in our area. Our criminal justice system is failing us. Great work by the Carbondale police, by the way, of doing their investigative work to find open-source social media videos of them brandishing firearms, working with confidential informants to see that they would be in their area. And obviously, those tips were right. There were firearms recovered. They did resist. There were drugs involved. Fled, causing danger to everyone in those areas. Our criminal justice system is failing us. Hopefully they catch the remaining suspects and put them away for some time now rather than being a burden and danger to the communities in which we live in. So great work, all involved. I'm sure this was multiple police departments through all those towns, but Carbondale specifically and Scranton and the Lackawanna County District Attorney's Office for taking the lead here. Just goes to show that the work that our members in blue do each and every day is very real and very impactful on our day-to-day lives. Hopefully these cretins are removed from the streets for a very long time. It's 3:46 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Today's show is brought to you by Roach Supply. It's the premier bath and kitchen supplier for NEPA, and they're celebrating 75 years in business. You can visit them at roachsupply.com today. I appreciate their sponsorship of the show. We do have our day's financial follow-up. Again, a little mark of the markets as of a minute or two ago. And here's an update of that list today for April 29th during the trading hours, again, of about a minute or two ago. The Dow is down 403 points. It's at 48,739. That's a 0.82%. NASDAQ is down 68 points. It's at 24,596. That's a negative 0.28%. Standard & Poor 500 is at 7,120. That's down 19 points or a quarter percent down. Crude oil futures is up $7. Up $7 at $107 per barrel. Gold is down $40. Current gold price per spot ounce is $4,540. And silver is down a dollar. Silver is at $71.50 right now. And again, this continues to fluctuate in real time. That's just the snapshot of the markets in just a while ago. It's time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. I must be all riled up in the control room today, huh? Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So for all of those who celebrated Virginia redrawing its congressional maps, well, be careful what you wish for. It's official. Florida just succeeded doing the same, which positions Republicans to win an extra four seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. It has fully passed the Senate, 21-17, has already passed their House, and it's now headed to DeSantis' desk. So, again, be careful what you wish for. There's some news coming out that the mother lode of lithium has been found right here in America. I would suspect this is going to be somewhat of an issue, sort of like data centers and gas drilling and such like that. We may no longer need to rely on foreign batteries to power our electronics. Geologists have announced that the Appalachian Mountains could be hiding a sprawling multi-billion dollar cache of lithium that could last the U.S. hundreds of years. Research shows that the Appalachians contain enough lithium to help meet the nation's growing needs, declared the U.S. Geological Survey Director Ned Mamala in a statement. According to the map by the institution, the East Coast mountain ranges houses around 2.5 metric tons of the battery precursor, most of which is concentrated in the Carolinas, Maine, and New Hampshire. Total value is around $64.4 billion, which will take all reliability on foreign lithium away and make it domestically. With this recent mineral mother load, the USGS officials estimate we could supply 1.6 million grid-scale batteries, enough to power 130 million electric vehicles or supply 180 billion laptops or collectively thousands of years of global use. Could also fuel 500 billion cell phones, the equivalent of 60 devices for every person on Earth. All told, the haul is enough to replace 328 years of imports, at least year's level, at last year's level, providing a major contribution to U.S. mineral security at a time where global lithium demand is rising rapidly. So good news, any things that, especially in the national security level that we could resource here is better for us, right? I did see something else. Here we go. So Hakeem Jeffries, with his ever so after losing the Supreme Court case this morning about gerrymandering districts based on race, Hakeem Jeffries, of course, called his press conference to where he talked very slowly with his hands. We are now at a point where affirmative action is gone, diversity is gone, equity is gone, inclusion is gone. Well, my answer to that? Excellent. Let's get back to merit, equality, and fairness. How about that? Affirmative action should be gone. All it was reverse discrimination. Diversity, same thing. Equity, no. And inclusion, Yeah, if you work hard, of course you should be included. If you're based on merit, of course. No one should be excluded if they meet the criterias, for whatever reason. So, yeah, let's get back to merit, equality, and fairness, right? So that's some of the headlines coming across the wire now as we speak. Some new stuff that aren't on the schedule, but as I see it come around and I think it's of interest to you, I pass it along to you because that's what we do here on the Rob O'Donnell Show. And that's why we are your place for real talk, real perspective, and real news. The number one listened to news talk radio station in Northeast Pennsylvania. So UGI is selling off its electric division for $470 million. Sale would affect 63,000 customers in Luzerne and Wyoming counties. UGI Utilities have announced an agreement to sell its electric division in Pennsylvania to Argo Infrastructure Partners. UGI Electric Division assets include about 2,700 miles of transmission and distribution lines and 14 substations that serve more than 63,000 customers in parts of Luzerne and Wyoming counties. The transition is expected to close in the first quarter of 2027, so this time next year, subject to customary closing conditions and Apple regulatory approvals, according to the press release. It should be a seamless transition for customers with no impact to them, public relations manager for UGI said. Municipalities served by UGI Electric, the city of Nanticoke, the boroughs of Courtdale, Dallas, Edwardsville, 44th, Harvey's Lake, Kingston, Larksville, Luzerne, New Columbus, Plymouth, Pringle, Shikshinny, Sugar Notch, Sawyersville, Warrior Run, West Wyoming, and Wyoming, townships of Conyngham, Dallas, Fairmont, Franklin, Hanover, Hunlack, Huntington, Jackson, Kingston, Lake, Lehman, Newport, Plymouth, Ross, and Union. UGI Electric also serves customers in Monroe County and Knoxon Township in Wyoming County. UGI Natural Gas Division, which serves close to 700,000 customers throughout Pennsylvania, is unaffected by the sale. So we'll see if it affects you or not. It's 4 o'clock here at WILK.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.